This is the Holy Letters of the Rebbe in Volume 4. This is letter number 1003. This is dated on the 16th day of Iyar, Tovshin Yud Aleph, Brooklyn. And the Rebbe is addressing this to Yehuda Leib Sheikhle Tzaitlin, to Rabbi Tzaitlin. Tzaitlin is a family that they lived in Canada. It's a family that my father, I believe, told me that he used to be his teacher, this Tzaitlin's teacher. I mean, they're all passed away already. His son actually is, I think it's his, there were two brothers over there, Heschel and Label Tzaitlin, and they're both passed away, but one of the sons is in Tzvas. So I'm chutn with my brother, and I think he's very, very sick, should have a refuah shleima. But anyways, the Rebbe is addressing to Yehuda Leib Sheikh Tzaitlin. Shalom Abracha. Peace and blessing. The Rebbe says this is responding to your letter that you are notifying that your mother and you and your wife already received the visas to go to Canada and that you are preparing to travel to travel there. So may it be Hashem's will that it should be the trip should go well and you should come to your desired destination, that you should settle in a fitting way in before you physically and spiritually. And certainly, the Rebbe says, before your journey, you'll organize a fabrengen, a chassidish fabrengen, a izvadus, which this will impact so that you don't forget the expression of my father-in-law, the Rebbe with all the titles, the Rebbe Yizchus Yagaleinu, that he says that the fact that people are distant from one another in space should not, God forbid, impact a distance among the Hasidim. So even though they live in distant places, they should not become distant, I guess, emotionally or in their connections. He says this connection can be held up even later on. On the contrary, it's going to strengthen even more through all of us holding on to the tree of life, which is the teaching of Chassidus and the conduct of the way of Chassidus, with blessings for proper, again, for a good settling in a good way. And apparently, I mean, I'm just gathering, maybe where he was coming from, I would guess it must have been France, because that's where they all lived, a lot of them, because he also comes from Russia. And so I'm just guessing that at that time, after the DP camps, they went to France, and then they moved, and some of the people stayed behind. And the Rebbe was saying, basically, even though that you're leaving them, you don't really have to leave them in the sense that becoming really distant, but you can still stay connected through being connected to the tree of life. And one of the things is that, you know, people don't realize that they asked the Rebbe, what did he want? What did he want from Chassidus? What was his expectation? And he said something very powerful that we don't sort of emphasize that much. He says he wanted Chassidim to be like one big family. He wanted them to treat each other just like family members. So of course, you have the fact that you have to love one another, every Jew you love. But yet within that, there is also what you call family, your own family. So you know, your family, you're close to them. He wanted to Chassidim to be very close to each other and to reach out to one another, to help, to support each other. And there was an expression actually brought down, and the Rebbe Nayom Yom brings down, that it was that the Chassidim used to say that the piece of bread, which is my piece of bread, is yours just as it is mine. Which means they didn't own a lot. He owned a very little, maybe a piece of bread. But even though it's my own, it's yours just as it is mine. And the emphasis the Rebbe brings down there, that they used to say first yours before they said it's mine. But it says yours, it's yours, like mine, meaning to say also that they used to say first that it's yours first. The sense is that the sense of sharing and caring for one another. I had an opportunity, that one of the people that lives in Sharon, not a Chabad Hasidic family, but her father was a great rabbi, and he also was in the in the place where the Chabad community established during the war. They went to Uzbekistan in Samarkand, that's in Bukhara, a lot of, and in various different, some went to Siberia, they went different places, and the Chabad community, as soon as they come to a place, immediately they would organize yeshivas, shuls, meetings, they right away, their Jewish life. So even though it was far away from home, and even though it was difficult times, they didn't stop, and they organized. So now you had people that came from Poland, and they were totally displaced. They were running from the Germans, and they were running into Russia. And, you know, as you know, the stories, many of them died. There were sicknesses, there was hunger, there was all kinds of problems that they had over there. And but some of them ended up in Uzbekistan, in Samarkand, in those communities. And here is a rabbi who was a very very articulate and very knowledgeable and a very you know, distinguished rabbi. And he says, you know, I can't begin to tell you what Chabad, the people over there, did. He told, like, somebody, one woman in particular, and we've read about her husband. He ran the soup kitchen. He ran Binyamin Garadetsky. He was the one that in was in charge of the Rebbe's office in France, which took care of all of Northern Africa. And he said that his wife would cook a big pot of soup. What did she have in the soup already? She tried to put in whatever she can't find, some nutritious stuff to give, to have, there should be some calories, there should be some, you know, whatever she can find over there. And she would cook it up, and she'd stand by the door, and as soon as she would see a yeshiva person, somebody who is somebody Jewish, or especially those who look like that they were part of the religious community, she would give there, and she would stand there and give them soup, and she says that she saved our lives. He says, don't tell me what Chabad is today. He says, I will tell you, he says to me, what Chabad was in the days of terror, when the days when we had nothing. How they reached out, how they sort of got together, created that environment, and they helped each other. And these were one of the things that the Rebbe wanted, that they should be a very strong and protective of each other and to hold together. Because we know that when we stick together, we are a force that nobody can overcome. If we are splintered and we fight each other, that's when we get all of our problems coming. But so this is the beautiful history, and we're talking about at times that, you know, people's humanity was challenged. You know, when you're hungry, my mother used to tell me, when you're hungry, there's really no stops. You know, you're hungry. You want a piece of bread. You want something to eat, and there's no courtesy. There is no gentleman. There is no, you know, all bets are off. You're hungry. You want to eat. And I remember my father telling me that, you know, that sometimes they were together and they were celebrating Shabbos, and people were hungry, and they prepared for Shabbos for everybody a small piece. Somebody got up in the middle of the night and grabbed out of there. But people were hungry, you know. I mean, you can't judge anybody when they're hungry, you know, and they were looking for food. What? But yeah, but on the other hand, you know, we see some of our, you know, leaders and great people, you know, they stood by all the greatest tests. You know, there was some Hasidim, they were incarcerated, there was no kosher food, and they survived on very, very little. You know, they never didn't want to. I have my mother's uncle, Allah Ashleim Asholem, and he was actually in Leningrad, and he was there during the time that the siege. It was a hunger, there was nothing to eat, and people were flying, like cockroaches in the street, and people were dying. Nobody even bothered burying them and everything else. My father tells me he used to go out and bury the people over there, and the Jewish people at least find them. It was just, it was a disaster. And here this fellow was, he was a very, very religious man, and my first cousin, you know, my mother's sister's son. They're both everybody's passed on already. But he was a good writer. He wrote up and he had a good memory. He wrote up stories from the past, what he grew up with in Leningrad in those times. So he said, he had an article in which he wrote up, and he said, my uncle, which means, or my mother, this is his mother's uncle, but he says, my uncle, he called him, my uncle, the Baal Teshuvah. He says, he repented, you know, when somebody sins, then you do Teshuvah. It's called the Baal Teshuvah. He says, my uncle, he says he was a Baal Teshuvah. He repented. He says, what do you mean that he repented? I mean, he was like a holy man. But he said, because during the time they were starved, they were lying there starving, somebody brought a not kosher piece of salami, but he didn't want to eat it. He couldn't get himself to eat the non kosher food. And you know, he goes on describing, I read the story a long time ago, he goes on to describing his inner struggles of eating it versus staying alive, because halachically you're supposed to eat it and stay alive. That's the halacha. But he couldn't get himself to eat it for whatever reason. Maybe, you know, he just couldn't get himself to eat it. So the point of the article was that he did teshuva at the end. He repented for not eating it. That he, but it cost him his life, basically. And miraculously, it was such a great miracle that two of his daughters, because there was nobody there, they ended up in a home. They were orphans, both the mother and the father, they both passed away. They were young children, two daughters, and they ended up in some Russian orphanage over there. My uncle, my mother's brother, happened to walk by one day, and they were playing in the yard. It was a fenced off yard. They were playing, and they recognized my uncle, which is my mother's brother. They recognized him. He turned over the world, he got him out of there. And they traveled along with them to later on, and eventually they brought him out of Russia with them when they came over there. Both of them settled in England, and they both got married to distinguished family, and they both have, you know, tons of offsprings all over the world, you know, in all countries, and very beautiful families. But it's amazing, those two girls were the daughters of this man who wouldn't eat that and was miraculously how God saved those children. They could have ended up in some you know, Russian orphanage over there. Who knows what would happen over there to them. And miraculously they were saved, they were out, and eventually they married to raise real beautiful families today. It's like unbelievable, greatest miracle.